would love to listen to talk radio, but on both AM and FM. But on AM radio over the past 20 years, I've been quite disturbed to hear the low opinion that artists have in the mind of most mainstream Americans. And the reason for that is that series of, to me, foolish controversies over sacrilegious art that began in the 1980s and continued right through the 90s. The most famous example being Andre Serrano's Piss Christ, which showed a plastic crucifix submerged in a beaker of the artist's urine. And I'm an atheist, right? But I respect religion enormously, and I think that the art world really was on a self-destructive path there in allowing this image of itself to be broadcast as frivolous and nihilistic and disrespectful of of basic ethical values and right. So on. So I what I feel is that the consequences of the art world's delusionalism, as I call it, art and music programs are being cut at the primary school level nationwide as budgets become tighter. So I say in this polemical introduction to Glittering Images that American school children are paying the price, okay, for this, the insularity of the, of the art world. What I'm trying to do is to bring a whole other attitude toward art into universities and into the public sense of what art is. I feel that art has a spiritual meaning, that it's a spiritual mission. But that's not the way people in the art world talk, or people in an academe analyze art.
Right, and you also say that America is a very practical country, and that art, in a sense, is so non-practical that it's something we've never really embraced, and especially the kind of art that's in your book here.
Exactly. America is only, barely 200 years old. So we respond to nature, the grandeur, the magnitude of the Grand Canyon, the Hudson River, valley, and so on and so forth. Whereas in Europe, there is this heritage of thousands of years of art. Art is all around everyone. It's part of the basic curriculum because it is their culture. Now, that's a positive, but it's also a negative, because it means that young artists feel burdened, okay, by the greatness of the past. We're kind of starting fresh here,
yeah.
And this is why we created Hollywood. Hollywood is one of our great bequests to the world. We're fabulous at blockbuster popular entertainment here, But the fine arts really never earned total respect until Jackson Pollock, that generation of abstract expressionists in the 1940s and 1950s. That's when the capital of the art world switched from Paris to New York. But what I'm saying is that the art world has done a very poor job, okay, of outreach. Look at in primary schools, what's called art class is really do-it-yourself stuff, okay, with construction paper and glue sticks and so on. What I'm calling for is for real art history to be introduced into the primary school level and to be a required course, if possible, at the university level, which it certainly is not right now. So what's happened is that, in my view, the art world and art making, that it's kind of flatlined. I think that the real creativity right now is in industrial design, it's in computer animation, and I think that this does not bode well for the future of the American arts. So I'm trying to reach both, in other words, a conservative audience and a liberal audience.
Yeah.
I'm saying to liberals, wake up, get out of your ghettos. It's sterile what you're doing right now. You're locked in your own snobbery materialism. Wake up, okay, and look around you at the country you live in, and also recognize that art has a spiritual meaning to it, which you have no language for. And I'm saying to conservatives, please do not stereotype art by the follies of the current art world.
Right.
No, okay, this is the history of humanity. It's a history of culture. It's your obligation, I'm saying to conservatives, to inform yourself and your children about art, but how to do that. So I spent 5 years writing this very slim handbook, Glittering Images, which has 29 chapters, moving down from ancient Egypt all the way through the centuries, right down to George Lucas's Revenge of the Sith, which was released the last in the Star Wars series in 2005. I have these full-page, gorgeous color illustrations to try to enamor people with art. I'm trying to show, just sit there, gaze at a beautiful image, and you will feel a sense of serenity, a sense of perspective and vision that you did not dream possible.
I want to back up for 1 second, because you said about this, the spiritual dimension of art. Now, do you believe to access that, or to have a greater sense of the aesthetics of art, that there, and especially in visual art, we really do need, as what you call, a historical framework of objective knowledge? Is that really necessary to get at what art is and why it moves us?
Yeah, well, I think that's absolutely necessary in the Western tradition, which is why I kept to the Western history in this book. Okay, this is our tradition, and what I'm showing is that this incredible continuity. It's like this river, this cascade that's coming down to us over the centuries, and nothing is ever lost. I'm saying, but despite the fact of, you know, how fragile art objects often are, and how accidental sometimes their preservation is, as in the case of the Charioteer of Delphi, gorgeous bronze sculpture that was buried by an earthquake in, you know, in ancient Greece that I have in the book. It's absolutely heart-stoppingly beautiful. But yes, I do feel, okay, that as a career teacher, I've been in art schools now, you know, for 40 years, as a classroom teacher, I feel that students are not getting any sense of history at all, even in regard to politics, okay, in the way that the current primary system, you know, is organized. And I think this is a disaster. Okay, if you see nothing around you but the present, okay, what I've discovered is that very religious people who know the Bible intimately tend to have a greater sense of history than the most, you know, the most polished products of the elite universities in the United States, whom I encounter when they're working in the media in New York and so on, and their minds are very confused. You need a structure of history. It's almost like understanding geology, geological time. Well, same thing here with the history of art. It's sort of a cultural time.
Right.
So now this is not the way things are taught anymore at the major universities. The great art history survey courses of old that began with cave art and moved over 2 semesters down to, you know, modernist painting, those are being slowly phased out. Okay, there are a few schools where they're still thriving, but it's rare. The graduate students being turned out today with these new styles of approach, you know, which are post-structuralism and post-modernism and so on, they don't have the minds for that. They're not able to think in such long trajectories of time. So that they're not. So the students are just getting hit or miss classes with these people. You know, a teacher will offer a course in a few themes or something. Instead of this giving, what is the point of a college education if not to give a great historical overview to students? I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
And I think the result is our young people's very chaotic minds these days, swamped with Twitter and Facebook this culture sort of trains you to have attention deficit disorder. Everything is at you. You know, every
right.
moment there's some foolish thing like video screens on the top of gas pumps where I live, or you get into an airplane and there's a video screen right at your eye level you can't turn off, noise pouring at you from every direction. So what I'm saying is that I base the structure of my book on Catholic breviaries and missals, that is where you have these a series of devotional images that you contemplate. Okay, what I'm trying to invoke in readers is just stare at this image, just contemplate it in quiet, okay, and you will discover this incredible expansion of your own imagination.
Yeah. One of the great artists in this, you say, and it might surprise some people because you have such legendary historical artists in here, you say one of the great living artists is George Lucas. Why pick him, and you end the book with him as well?
Yes, well, that wasn't part of my original plan. I had planned, my idea was to begin, with ancient Egypt and then end with some strong example of contemporary art. And I looked around, and I'm sorry, I just did not find anything, okay, as strong as the Star Wars saga that I kept on encountering on TV. There's a Spike TV is a cable channel that often runs the Star Wars films back to back for days. And coming into the films by accident, I knew them, but not like this. To come into them as you're channel surfing, in other words, they're not part of the plot. I began to notice all kinds of visual effects that I thought were very impressive. And then I became absolutely obsessed with the grand finale of Revenge of the Sith, which takes place on this apocalyptic volcano planet of Mustafar. There's so much going on in it about politics and industry, this passionate love, hate, and then at the end, the construction of Darth Vader and the birth of the twins, Luke and Leia, and then the separation of the twins as they're adopted by parents on far different, way across the galaxy and so on. I found it to have the power of a Puccini opera, and I thought that my good Lord, the visual effects. Then when I began to research it, I discovered the incredible complexity of the model that was done by Lucasfilm of the actual planet, the months of preparation for the great duel that occurs on these rafts in the middle of a lava river. Okay, that took months of training that I think is dance theater. I think it's the equivalent of ballet, that, you know, it's our ballet, okay, and so on. And I just felt that George Lucas has not received, you know, the kind of respect as a visual artist that I think he deserves, and his impact around the world is staggering. There is no living artist in any field that has had the impact that George Lucas has had on the imagination of several generations now of people around the world. Now, and then when I went to do research on him, I found how few books there were in university collections.
Right.
And so he has really been ostracized. I had to search for books on him, buy them myself, and from these books I constructed my portrait of him as a visual artist. Right. from his earliest years in the small town of Modesto, California.
Well, Camille Paglia is the author of Glittering Images, A Journey Through Art from Egypt to Star Wars. Camille, thanks so much for coming on.
Well, thank you so much, Jonathan.